member that regularly meet with us and be here. We're glad to see our visitors because we have a number of ours that are visiting in other places as well. So we appreciate you being here. It helps fill not just that void, but it's an encouragement, you know, for individuals that may be traveling or here visiting to take the time to meet together with God's people and worship on the Lord's Day. If you're from the community, we really appreciate your being with us as well this morning and using this day to assemble together and to worship God. As we look into our lesson this morning, we are going to be noting here that idea from our scripture reading over in Galatians, the 6th chapter and the 9th verse, about, in a sense, you know, hanging in there, enduring, keep on keeping on, so that we can come to the end, and at the end of life, that we can be satisfied with having lived with God, walked in fellowship with Him, and been a partaker of those blessings, but also, you know, to be longing for and ready to hear those words, "Well done, a good and faithful servant." But that comes at the end of life. Sometimes it's a longer life for some than it is for others, but nonetheless, as we live in Jesus Christ, just as time passes, there is, you know, certain challenge, or there are challenges, really, that we must face. And as we face those challenges, we find that our adversary, who would just love to keep us from hearing those words, you know, "Well done, good and faithful servant." That adversary that would like to hear that we are to depart and to be with Him in His own abode, in His place, throughout eternity, suffering with Him, being removed from the presence of God, and understanding then what it truly is like not having God's blessing shower upon us. And not only as we walk in relationship with Jesus Christ, but even as we walk here upon this earth, as the sun shines upon the good as well as the evil, and as the rain comes down upon the good as well as the evil. But totally separated from the blessings of God, that would just be torment. We find that our adversary, like I said, he will just kind of keep coming back, picking at us time after time after time, hoping to wear us down. And I think that that is where the apostle is coming from as he's beginning to close out this letter. Because as he begins this letter, over in the first chapter, in the 6th verse, he says, "I marvel that you are so quickly removing from Him that called you in the grace of Christ unto a different gospel." We see here that there were those that had heard the gospel of Jesus Christ who had gone, "Wow, that's great news," just as it is, being that the idea of the word gospel itself being good news, going, "Yeah, I agree with that. That is good news," and accepting that good news and being glad that someone brought that and taught that and shared that with us in our life. And so that's what had happened to these individuals that are reading this letter. And so they had agreed to that as well. They said, "We agree that those are words of life. We agree that those are things that we need and that we want in life." And so they surrendered their lives. They obeyed the gospel. But now, within just, you know, a few years' time, there are those that are giving up. And the apostle says, "I'm just amazed that so quickly," because time does often challenge us and does wear some people down, but, you know, "so quickly in removing from that faith that you had in that message and what that message taught, the belief system of that message." And so as he closes out this letter and he's getting there to that idea that, you know, even in, as he talked about there, the different gospel, those things that were contrary to the gospel of Jesus Christ, he talked about those being a matter of the flesh and that corruption of the gospel and kind of the mingling of it, as in this letter in particular, with the works of the old law He says, you know, that comes from the flesh, as well as just a lot of things that, like John talked about, you know, the things that are of the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the vainglory of life. He says that also, you know, is of the flesh. And he talks about those things here in the fifth chapter when he talks about, you know, we can walk by the Spirit, and if we do so, we won't fulfill the lust of the flesh, or we can walk by the lust of the flesh, and we won't be then in fellowship with God and the Spirit of God. And so as he closes out this letter, he then says, someday we will give an account for what we have done. In other words, we'll begin to harvest the things that we have done in this life. We'll begin to partake of, you know, the ripened fruit of the life that we have lived. And so he calls upon these individuals and thus upon us to not to give up, not to faint, not to grow weary, not to get tired of doing that which is right. And he says, because we will someday be rewarded. So what is it that we could use in not fainting? There are several things. There are tools that God provides for us. There are things that God has assured us of and that God gives to us. He has promised. He has revealed in His Word. This morning we just want to notice three things that we can use that could help us so as not to faint. And we're going to be talking about patience and learning patience. You know, my wife kind of jokes that she got, you know, where that she felt like that she needed patience, and she, you know, was praying for patience, and so the Lord gave her a lot of things to test patience. And it's kind of like, now wait a minute, I just kind of hoping it would be a gift. You know, I just kind of hoping all of a sudden I'd just be a patient person. I didn't really expect that it was going to be a challenge, and it was going to be something I was going to have to practice, and I'm going to have to, you know, understand things that I need to do in order. So, yeah, okay. Learn patience. That's the first thing we're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about thinking like a farmer. How many farmers in here this morning? Well, okay. So that's something as well that we're going to have to learn, because not all of us are farmers. And take the long view. Those are the three things that would help us as we look this morning to help us to not grow weary and not to faint. And so the first thing that we notice here is to learn patience. This picture reminds me so much of something that one of my daughter-in-laws used to do with her dogs. She would train them and she would, you know, put that bone up on their nose and say, nope, you can't have that yet. And they'd just sit there. And then she'd go, okay. Boy, it'd go, I mean, that was it. That was funny. It's like, you know, and it was gone. I mean, but it'd just sit there, you know, until she'd tell them that. And then she would, you know, put out their food, and each of them, all two of them, you know, would get their own bowl, and she'd say, no, just wait. They'd just sit there, you know, waiting for that. And that was something they had to be trained in, something that you know, they had to learn. We find that James talks about this over in the fifth chapter of his writing. The fifth chapter of James, verse 10 beginning, he says, take, brethren, for an example of suffering and of patience, the prophets who spake in the name of the Lord. He says, behold, we call them blessed that endured. You have heard of the patience of Job, and have seen the end of the Lord, how that the Lord is full of pity and merciful. And if you're not familiar with those events of Job, I would just encourage you sometime, go back. It's here in the Bible, back there in the Old Testament. Look up the book of Job and read that. And then you will go, wow, yeah, I understand why James there, you know, used him as an example. And about, you know, his patience. And when we are talking about patience, we're talking about the ability to endure. When we're using this word that the writers used in the New Testament that we translate patience for us here in the English, it's the ability to endure, to hold out, to bear up, to persevere. And James says that we call those people who are able to do that, man, they are blessed. Have you ever, and not necessarily anything in respect to, you know, spirituality or necessarily, you know, a test spiritually of our faith, but just somebody, you know, that's had to, and you know, put up with the situation for a long time, and you go, wow, Man, you are a patient person. I don't know that I could do that. And so you see, when we're saying that, we're saying you are blessed to be able to do that. What an ability to be able to endure, to, you know, patiently bear up, to hold out, you know, to just continue to persevere on. We notice here in the 6th chapter of Hebrews, and in the 9th verse beginning there, he says, "But beloved, we are persuaded better things of you." In other words, he's saying here, we are confident, we are persuaded that you can learn patience. And if you are claiming to be a child of God, if you are, you know, claiming and wearing the name Christian, then he's saying, you can do this. And so if you're not doing this, then he says, you can do better. And so as he's writing here to those that are struggling with these tests and this patience of enduring, he says, "Beloved, we're persuaded better things of you and things that accompany salvation. Though we thus speak," he says then, reminding us, here's some things to help us, you know, in our patience, in our steadfastness to bear up. He says, "For God is not unrighteous to forget your work and the love which you show toward His name, in that you ministered unto the saints and still do minister." God, he says, God knows your work. God knows what you're doing. God knows what you're enduring. God knows what you're putting up with. And he says, and God's not forgetful of that. And he's not going to forget it. He says, "And we desire that each one of you may show the same diligence unto the fullness of hope, even unto the end." He says, God's made some promises, and you believe those promises. You accepted His word on those promises, and therefore you hope. In other words, you have an expectation. God's going to deliver. And so he says here that we desire that you keep, you know, fully that hope, that expectation, all the way to the end. That you be not sluggish. Don't let things wear you down. They're going to try. They're going to work at that. But don't let it cause us to drag our feet. But imitators of them who through faith and patience inherit the promises. Sometimes we talk about some of those. We're not going to this morning. We don't have time. We're just getting some skeletal and functional type support here. But, you know, that's a good advice for us to imitate, to look at these individuals in the Scriptures and those that you know that endure and that keep on and that remain faithful. And look, how did they do that? God's provided these examples for us. God has shown they had challenges similar to ours. They had lives similar to ours. They had feelings similar to ours. They thought in ways that we think, you know. They were not superhuman. They were just people, as he says here, who kept their confidence, their faith in God, so that they could keep, he says, their patience, so that they would inherit the promises. And so I asked them, look, you know, how were you able to do this? So we find that we can learn contentment. If you're about ready to get sprayed by a skunk, you can wait. You know? And so you can be content. You know, I know, I get teased by my family a lot because anytime I get in a line, something's going to happen. You know, I am a bad luck curse on any line I get in. And so if you ever see me in a line, don't get behind me, because I can guarantee you I'm going to break something up ahead of us. and I'm going to have to stand in line. I'm going to have to wait. And, you know, look, oh man, it looks like that's a shorter line, and I'll walk over there, get in that line, and then, oh, something over there breaks. And then, you know where I was? They got it fixed. They start going through. But now everybody's getting in that line because it's going through, you know. So learn contentment. There are things that happen we just can't do anything about. Over in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 8, we read this. He says, but godliness with contentment is great gain. So think of this. He says, we brought nothing into the world, for neither can we carry anything out. But we do have food and covering. We are living, we are alive, and we are surviving. Can we learn to be content with that? I don't want to have to. I know that you don't want to have to, but can we? Yes, we can. If necessary, we could learn to be content, he says, even with that. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Let's look at that one. What does that say? Oh, yeah, that's a good one. He says, be free from the love of money, content with such things as you have. For he himself has said, I will in no wise forsake thee, neither will I in any wise fail thee. God said, here's my promise. Can you be content with that? Doesn't mean we have everything we want. It doesn't mean everything goes really great all the time or even most of the time. It just means that God's there, he says. And God will not fail us. He gives us enough to make it on. You remember, those of you that are Bible students, if you're not sure, you can look this passage up. It's over in 2 Corinthians chapter 12, and the Apostle Paul there talked about something that was going on in his life. He called it a thorn in the side. So, you know, it was something that wasn't very pleasant at all. And he said, I prayed the Lord three times that that might be removed. And the Lord said, all my grace is sufficient for you. He says, what I give you is enough. And so Paul said, you know what? I'll hang in there. Because we'll look at a passage at the end of this lesson that'll show us that same attitude of Paul and how, in a sense, he did it. So, we realize that there are things that just do not come immediately. You know, there are investments that we make that take a while to grow. And especially at some of today's interest rates. I mean, if you got something in a simple savings account, you know, the 72 rule, you take whatever interest that you have, and you divide it by 72, that's how long it's going to take it to double. And about 1.9% interest, it's going to take like 36 years, you know, something like that, you know, before it doubles. And we go, well, you know, we just have to wait. It's going to be a while before I retire. It's going to have to be, you know. Because it's going to take a while. 401k, savings account, we all understand waiting for long-term results. We understand there are day traders, and that's all right if you can make a living at that, and you can do that business, you know, and you can make money at it. But for most of us, you know, it's in there for the long haul, right? And we know that we have to wait for some things. Some things just seem to be easier to wait for than others. And why? Well, you know, your reasoning is as good as mine. I'll just give you mine because I'm the one that's talking here. So, you know, my opinion is that a lot of it just comes from expectation, what we have expectations of. There are a lot of things we get quickly. We can microwave. It doesn't take long. We can run over and get the fast food, you know. And we realize, you know, I get the quality for that for which I had to wait for. Now, if I had to sit and wait for 30 minutes for somebody to bring my meal out, you know, I kind of expect it to taste better than, you know, a rubbery burger, you know, in some fast food restaurant type of thing. But nonetheless, you know, a lot of it is what we do have an expectation of. Some things we know will take time. There just isn't that express delivery option. Sometimes it has to come on a slow boat from China, you know. And so sometimes it takes a while. It doesn't get to ride on the 747. I just don't pay that extra, you know. Well, if you don't pay that extra, you're going to have to wait, you see. So there are some things we know, and with that expectation we can wait. So can we develop a long-view attitude toward the blessings we'll reap as a Christian? Can we grow in patience? Well, the Lord says we can. We just need to learn it. Well, something can help us is to think like a farmer. Now, I realize that most of us are not farmers, but most of us do have some experience in planting and growing things. It could be a tree, it could be a garden, it could be a chia pet, you know. Now, I realize a chia pet grows pretty quickly, but, you know, for even a chia to come to flower takes about 4 months. And so if you keep trimming yours just to keep it green, yeah, you know, you can do that for it. But if you want to fly off of that chia plant, you're going to have to wait about 4 months. It just takes a while. And so we find that James uses that illustration. Not everybody in his day was a farmer. But we understand it. We maybe not fully, but you know, we get the gist of it. He says, be patient therefore, brethren, until the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, being patient over it until it receive the early and latter rain. You ever go to the store and go, you know, I'd like to have some, and they go, well, they're not in season. Go to your restaurant, you know, they really make this really well. I mean, you know, this is the best of this. They go, well, it's not in season. We don't do that this time of year. You're just going to have to wait until, you know, it comes that time. You see, we all get some experience in it. Well, a farmer, he lives that daily. And so we need to kind of think about other people and some of the things that they have to go through. And he says, so as they wait to receive the various rains and the things that they need in order for that plant to come to fruition, they do so. So he says, be you also patient. Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand. You know, a farmer may have to wait months to get paid. And then he may get paid big time. I have a lot of family that's farmers. Well, not as much anymore, but you know, I've had a lot of family that's farmers. And sometimes they get a big payday. I've kind of looked at it because I know when to go visit them. You go visit them about every 4 years. You know, and it's kind of like a brother-in-law of mine said when some friends of his asked him, he said, what in the world did you do, Gary, to serve all this family descend on you? And it's not even yours, it's your wife's family. He goes, oh, they heard that we had a bumper crop this year. See? That's why you got to learn to think like a farmer. You know, you got to know just when to go visit a certain family. And so what I discovered is that a farmer, he has a bumper crop about every 4 or 5 years. So about every 4 or 5 years, we can show up, you know, and we can, you know, eat really well. you think, so a farmer, he might get paid really big, but he might get really little, you know. May not be much that year. And we go, well, why does he do it? Because he understands things. He thinks differently than we think. He thinks patiently. A farmer can have a wonderful life. I've got to do some of it. I enjoyed it. I'm not exactly sure why I have bad dreams about it to this day, but nonetheless, I think that I did enjoy it. But, you know, we get to work out in the great outdoors, get to breathe that fresh air. We get to watch God's creation work in its pure form, and we get to pet baby animals. Who doesn't like petting baby animals? You know. Yeah, it's enjoyable. There are a lot of rewards, you know, for it. But also, it's a living, you know. You need it in order to survive and in order to pay the bills and to have that things that you can learn to be content with, you know, clothing and housing type of thing. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, we begin reading here. He says, for it is written in the law of Moses, thou shalt not muzzle the ox when he treads out the corn. Is it for the oxen that God careth? Or saith he, assuredly it for our sake? Yea, for our sake it was written, because he that plows ought to plow in hope, and he that threshes ought to thresh in hope of the partaking. You see, even the treatment that we give of our animals, yeah, we love them, they're cute and they're cuddly and all of that, but sometimes they're a nuisance and they can get kind of expensive and they grow up and they're just not nearly as sweet and cuddly and cute as they were when they were little and things like that, and you kind of go, well, why am I doing it now? Well, I get something from that. And so I do take and provide for them and take care of them. And he says, well, God knows that. And he's saying, but it's for you I'm providing. And so that's why we learn to take good care of these creatures, of these animals. We find that a farmer, though, also has, as we said, that idea of pay. He has a trust in what he can't see. You go, well, he sees things all the time, plant growing. Yeah, but he's planted a crop or he has bought, you know, a heifer that is with, you know, that's got a calf, you know, it's pregnant. And, you know, one of the best buys is is, of course, it wouldn't be a heifer, I guess, if it was pregnant. So we're going to strike that one. So it's just because that's still a female cow, but okay, anyway. But that has a calf by its side. And you pay out this money for that. And you go, okay, you know, why am I paying out money for this? Because if you feed it, you treat it well, and it grows up, you know, the calf that's beside it, it'll be worth more money. You can sell it. You can make money off of it. And the calf that's in the cow, well, you know, when she has that cow, you'll be able to do the same with it. And then you'll be able to have the cow, you know, to have another calf type of thing. And pretty soon. But you're still counting on things you don't see yet. I've seen calves die. I've seen animals kill them. I've seen them get run over, you know, things like that. And you go, wow, that was a $1,200 loss in the pocketbook. Wait a minute. How many months did I feed that thing? And well, it was more than that I lost. But you trust. You see that it's going to come to fruition. So a farmer believes in a reliable record of agronomy. Says, you know, science teaches, agronomy tells us, you know, if I wait 58 days, I'll be able to harvest that corn, you see. And so, we think like a farmer. We trust in things that have worked, even though we don't yet see them. And a Christian doesn't see things, but we trust. We have a record of these things. Now, the third thing is that we learn to take a long view. I just kind of like this picture, and that's pretty cool. Whoever put, you know, a park bench there out here in this field, because I could sit on that thing and just look out over that view myself for a while. I just enjoy doing that, sitting and looking over a view. So sometimes we need to just sit down there and take the long view. We need to see some things, like he says here. We will reap in due season. It will happen. It just may not be immediately. I'm so amazed that you are so quickly removed from that, because it will happen. But sometimes you've got to look and it's way off over there. But it will happen. Over in Mark chapter 10, our Bible study, I kind of apologize for those you got here and we were still in our Bible study, but we were having a really good discussion. You should have just come on in. And so we were running a little over. But anyway, our adult class read this event just a week, last week we talked about this, but it's a little long, so I'm just going to refer you to it. I'm going to tell you a little about it, and then you go and read it if you're not familiar with it. But it's this young man that was a ruler, and he come running to Jesus, and he said, here, we'll read some of it. He said unto Jesus, good teacher, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life? And we find later that Jesus talked about things that were right. And he says, well, I do those things. I do the things that are right. I've done them from my youth. And so we find that Jesus said halfway through verse 21, he says, go sell what you have and give to the poor, and you shall have treasure in heaven, and come follow me. But his countenance fell at the saying, and he went away sorrowful, for he was one that had great possessions. You see, this young man who was wealthy, he thought about all these things he was going to have to give up in his wealth to give him immediate gratification. I mean, he doesn't have to. He might be a farmer, but he's done well enough that he doesn't have to worry about when the tomato ripens, when it comes up. Why grow a tomato and wait for it to ripen when you got the money to go to the store and get one right now, right? And so that's probably a little bit of his thinking. You want me to give up what? So that then, you know, I can have this. Well, I think I'll just kind of continue on the same course of life, he says. So we find the idea, well, why plant, hoe, water, tend, weed, grow your tomato when you can go to the market and buy it? But Jesus was being followed by individuals that weren't so wealthy, but still had homes and family that they had left behind. And one of them said, well, we've left everything. You know, what shall we have? And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto you, this is verse 29 of the 10th chapter of Mark, there's no man that hath left house or brethren or sisters or mother or father or children or lands for my sake and for the gospel's sake, but shall receive 100-fold now in this time, houses and brethren and sisters and mothers and children and lands. He says, they can receive all of these things now. He says, those who follow me were promised many things now. More houses than you have now. More family than you have now. More land than you have now. Oh, wait. He also says, with persecutions. He says, but there's also another thing that there's going to be more of. You've got a house now, and you've got land now, and you've got family now, and you've got some hardship now. Well, if you're going to have more family and more houses and more lands and more you can count on, you're going to have more hardships as well. He says, there's going to be persecutions. There's going to be trials. There are going to be things that are going to be saying, I don't know, is it worth it? I thought it would get easier. I thought Satan would give up by now. I mean, all how long is that dude going to keep coming back around? How many more times? He says, yes, you get many good things. Remember, the farmer gets some good things now. He gets to pet the little calves and gets to play with the bunny rabbits. Yeah, I've known farmers that raise bunny rabbits too. So, you know, you get some enjoyment, but it's hard. Sometimes it's raining, and sometimes you're out there in the cattle pen, and your boots are coming off because they're sticking in the mud, and there's more in the mud out there. I mean, it can be nasty. It can be hard. I know you don't worry about it here, but back in some places where I've lived and done this kind of stuff, the water freezes up, and you got to break the water. You got to break ice, and sometimes you got to tear out water lines and put in new, just all kinds. But you get good things, but yes, there are also hardships. But he says, as well, now notice, and in the world to come, eternal life. You get more houses, more family, more land, more hardship. But you also get in the completion of this life, and this is why you wait it out, this is why you endure, in the completion of this life, more life, even longer life, eternal life, wonderful life. Come and inherit all the things that are of God. Can you imagine what God gets? What He gets to have? He says, come and have mine. If you are patient and endure, you get to inherit these things. You know, Moses was called upon to look, to take the long view. Over in Exodus 5:22, I've used up too much time, sorry. Told you I'd get off my outline. All right. If I just stuck with it, it'd be 15 minutes. It'd be 10 minutes, but you can read it in 5. But anyway, let me just tell you. In Exodus chapter 5:22 and 23, you know, God sent Moses back to tell Pharaoh, let my people go or I'm going to come and get them, and you're not going to like it if I had to come and get them, type of thing, you know. But God knows He's going to have to come and get them. And so Moses comes to Him and he says, God, he says, it continues on. Why did you send me there? Moses is just making it harder on the people. And God tells Moses, He says, just wait. Just wait. And then in Deuteronomy chapter 32, after 40 years of this, and God speaking through Moses, and I'm confident that this is as well the feelings of Moses and not only that of God, but over in Deuteronomy 32, as God is looking at how that they would eventually have that which God had promised, and there would be other generations of this, and how that they would forget to take the long view. They'd forget to wait like God told Moses to wait. Because I'm going to do some great things, God says, but you're just going to have to wait on it. And so God says this over in Deuteronomy chapter 32 at verse 28. He says, "For they are a nation void of counsel, and there is no understanding in them." You see, don't get the long view. And then he goes on and he says, "Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end." That they would consider their latter end. It comes fast, trust me. Just a week ago, I was a young man with a young wife with young children. It was just last week. I'm telling you. I know old people used to tell me that too when I was that age. I go, "You're old. What do you know?" Surely you can't even remember that. Oh, yeah, it was just last week. I know day by day. I still even this day wonder, how can a day be so long and a year so fast? I mean, 2018, just about gone. Where did it go? I mean, yesterday was a long day. A year can't go that fast. It does. God says, just wait. Learn to be patient. Look to the latter end. Can you do that? It's hard when you're young, I know. But not everything comes instantly. The good things, the really good things, you usually have to wait for. And that's what these other passages remind us of. If I hadn't gotten so wordy, we'd read those. But write them down. Read them. They're excellent. Well, actually, I remember now. I just did verse 1 and 2 and 5 and 8 and 9 and 11 and 13 because I was going to read through those quickly. But just go ahead and read the whole chapter. Those verses kind of give you, you know, the breakdown, but you're missing some by not reading the whole chapter. When we properly and faithfully view heaven, it will become the most valuable asset worthy of endurance and all the energy and everything that we had to meet and every challenge that faced us to have it. I told you that I would end with what Paul said. I'll just do that. I'll just jump to that one passage. You've got there 2 Corinthians 4:17. Go read that. But we're going to turn on and read Romans chapter 8. And verse 18, these are the last of the passages, last of the sermon. We're just almost there as far as the end of the sermon. It might be a little longer before we get that good reward. May not be so long. We just never know. But nonetheless, he says, verse 18, remember when Paul said, "I've got this thorn in the flesh. I mean, it hurts. I wish somebody would remove it. God, wouldn't you remove this? Wouldn't you cause this problem to cease," whatever it was in his life? And God said, "Paul, I've given you a lot of grace. I've given you a lot of mercy. If it hadn't been for my long suffering, Paul," he says, "you would have died a blasphemer." I'm telling you, there are Christians probably that would be going, "Yeah, Paul's dead. Saul's dead. Back when you were persecuting them. But I was long-suffering. I let you pick on my people. I let you do terrible things to them. And I cried and I wept and wept, I guess. But, you know, I did that while I watched this. I stood up waiting for my martyr, Stephen, to be stoned, that you were standing there passing out stones to kill that man. I've given you grace, Saul. You're no longer Saul. You're known as the beloved apostle of Jesus Christ, Paul." So how did Paul take that news? Romans 8 and 18, he says, "For I reckon that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed to us." He was one of the ones that wrote a lot about the farmers. Used them as illustrations. And now he's taken that long view. He's learned to take that. He says, you know, whatever that thorn in the side was, he says, denying God and getting rid of it, if that would work, if that would do it, he said, that wouldn't even be worth what I would be giving up in the glories of God. I need this. I need to read these things from God's Word. I need these assurances. I hope that you could use it. I hope in some way it could benefit you as well. Thank you for letting me work out my own little psychological problems here, you know, my own counseling, you know, type of thing and situation. But if that's what you would desire and you would like to be a part of, the Lord invites you. He wants everyone to be a part of it. And He gives you the means and the ways which that you can endure, be long-suffering, so that you can reap the good things when life is over. If you're subject to that invitation of Jesus Christ in any way this morning, wouldn't you come? We invite you. We'll be whatever we can and whatever aid to help accomplish that as we stand and as we sing.
In the desert of